by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Welcome to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. My man, Tony Young. Mr. T.
Hello.
How are you, my friend?
I am great. I'm happy to be back as well.
That's good to see you.
Good to see your face.
Our own Matt Butler has finally succumbed to the Cairo news flu. Now, it's a little thing going around. You probably noticed here at Cairo, everybody is working as hard as they can. And these days, when an office gets sick, you know, most people don't notice, but when the Cairo newsroom gets sick, big holes develop, and we appreciate everybody who's working hard. Lisa is back. I'm very glad Lisa Brooks is back on the news desk tonight. Matt Butler filling in last night, and, you know, just got the best of him. He's taking a day to rest and recover, and I hope he feels better soon. But, Tony, I'm glad to have you along for the ride tonight.
I'm glad to be here, as always.
Lisa was talking in the news about the state not being able to repeal the assisted care, I'm not sure the verbiage, the tax that provides Washingtonians care, elder care, or elder senior care. 38 cents on every, or 58 cents on every $100. Lisa's in there shaking her head like I'm butchering this poor story. That doesn't seem like a lot. And it provides for $38,000 of care for Washingtonians with regard to their retirement. And it's that doesn't go very far, as the representative said in the newscast. You know, I've got family members who are at that stage of their life where, you know, just being home isn't an option anymore. And the cost of care in most senior facilities can run anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 to $7,000 to $10,000 a month. And one thing that happens when someone is in assisted living, senior care, is that their meals at a senior facility are taxed. Yes, the state actually taxes the meals that are served to seniors in assisted living care. And I read this story and I was just mystified that of all the things we tax in this state, all the various, you know, sugar taxes on sodas or tabs for your car, land, whatever it is, we tax everything. It seems like me that there comes a time in your life when you've paid your share. You've paid your share of taxes. I remember seeing efforts in the past to eliminate property tax for retirees and try to give them a little bit of a break in making their way through their senior year. Their senior year.
Well, we hope it's more than one year.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tone, welcome, everybody. Happy retired. You've got one senior year. Good luck.
Make it count, guys.
Yeah, seriously. Well, Washington Bill 1431, sponsored by Representative Joe Timmons, would provide sales tax relief for residents of senior living communities when it comes to meals. I mean, it just seems almost insulting, if not perverted, to tax folks on the meals that they eat at a senior living facility. And, you know, the bill passed the House floor. I mean, it's not just me. The bill passed the House floor 95 to nothing last week. Now it's up to the Senate to look at it for further consideration. And I can't imagine with a 95 to nothing vote in the House that the Senate's going to have a problem passing this. You know, the bill is about parity. Seniors living in nursing homes, hospitals, assisted living facilities are not subjected to this tax. You know, the bill will provide some much needed relief to Washingtonians by ensuring the meals provided at senior living communities are exempt from sales tax. You'd think, you know, I know that we're a tax heavy state, and I know that as a Democrat, it's my fault. Mine, you can text us right now, 888-973-5476. I'll take your heat. You know, I tend to vote liberal Democratic, and that's why we have as much taxes as we do. I get it. But even me, as a bleeding heart snowflake, liberal foot soldier of freedom here, I can't see the justification of taxing seniors living in senior living communities for the meals that they eat. Hopefully, Representative Timmons will get this thing done. And this kind of insulting taxation on our seniors will be put away forever.
Yeah, I've never understood the idea of taxing seniors for needing a place to live. I mean, I get that there are housing taxes for most people, but by the time you're a senior, you've paid your dues, surely, I would think.
I would think you have, Tone. I would think that you've filled enough potholes. You know, you help build the damn fire department, let alone keep it running for the entire years of your working life. There comes a point where, you know, seniors have, you know, let's pay them the respect that they're due, at least if we stop the tax burden on them and allow them to take what savings they've managed to put together, what pensions they were able to hold on to through their working careers, what Social Security they've paid into, what little that gives back to them over the decades, you know, that they've paid into it, that money takes them and allows them to enjoy the rest of the balance of their life. Senior years, plural, many. I'm really sorry about that senior year thing. That was a horrible slip of the tongue.
It's going to come back to haunt you.
It really is, man. That's... Wow, play that one at the Cubby Christmas party. And please don't have it be catered by seniors. They hate me. And then I read another story about, you know, where our tax dollars are going. I mean, we tax everything, I understand. And it costs money to run a city, a county, a state like Washington. I get it. And I know that the Democratic policies, liberal policies are what cause us to tax. But I also know that the tax base of the western side of the state, controlled by Democrats, pays for a lot of the services for the conservative Republican eastern half of the state as well. I mean, you know, there are a lot of taxes, but we pay taxes for the entire state, not just Democrats, Republicans as well. And our taxes go across the state. But when our taxes go to subsidize two of the richest and most successful companies in Washington, that's when it really gets under my skin, more so than taxing putting in a senior center. When I read that of the Washington companies that have the most employees who qualify for state assistance in the way of food assistance, SNAP, right? Subsidized nutrition, and I'm not sure what SNAP stands for, but it's the new name, the more politically correct name for food stamps, SNAP. The two employers that have the most in the state of Washington that have the most employees qualifying for government assistance are Amazon and Walmart. Now, I don't have to tell you that Amazon is owned by the richest man in America. It depends on what day it is and how much money Elon Musk has lost today, or some guy over in the Middle East when oil prices go up per barrel. You know, Jeff Bezos has got enough money to leave the planet whenever he wants to.
And he has.
Exactly.
And by the way, SNAP, for those wondering, is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Thank you, Tone.
Yep.
I knew nutrition was – I knew the M was for nutrition. I'm partial credit there.
Oh, yeah.
So Jeff Bezos, one of the richest men on the face of the earth. I mean, he's so rich he can look like a villain in a Austin Powers movie. You know, he looks like Dr. Evil with that haircut. I don't know who told him that was a good idea. And he's a smart, he's a brilliant man. And I'm not telling rich guys how to spend their money. He can do whatever he wants. He wants to, you know, leave the planet and build a space rocket and take on whatever he wants to do. He wants to try new things. That's great. I know that Amazon's laying off a bunch of people these days because they tried a bunch of things like Amazon Go, those walk-in grocery stores, Amazon Fresh deliveries. He's always trying new things, and sometimes they fail. When you've got that much money and you have that many tentacles into the business community, you try things and some of them work and some of them don't. But when your employees don't make enough to not need federal assistance, and Amazon's one thing, but it's the Walton family that owns Walmart. Walmart is notorious for their employment practices of keeping folks just under full time. You know, keeping folks at limited hours so that they don't make enough money to qualify for insurance or they don't pay them enough to lift them out of poverty. Folks who qualify for SNAP or for food assistance are technically at below the poverty level. And when you work for one of the richest companies in the world, in Walmart, and your employees are relying more than any other employer on government assistance, that means we are subsidizing the workforce at Walmart and at Amazon. you know, a company like Amazon who doesn't pay taxes for the most part, you know, when you've got a company that big, communities, cities, counties have to incentivize those companies with tax breaks. I understand how competitive business is, and if you want airplanes built in your state, or if you want the headquarters in your state, you've got to incentivize those companies to stay, or they'll go. I understand that mentality. I understand how that dynamic works. But when Walmart, one of the largest employers, probably the largest employer in America, one of, if not the, and Amazon, the richest guy in America, with employees everywhere, always hiring, when these guys are getting subsidized workforces from U.S. taxpayers, something's wrong. You know, I know Walmart's essential to communities, especially during times like now, economic downturns, you know, difficulties with inflation, when people really do need low-priced items, when people really do need to stretch their dollar as far as possible. I mean, I get the benefit of Walmart. I'm not knocking superstores with low prices. I understand they provide a valuable service. I know they also put mom and pop businesses out of business across America. A Walmart moves into a smaller town, smaller community, and you know, most of the local stores that are now all encompassed inside of Walmart, boot stores, jean stores, clothing stores, grocery stores, hardware stores, auto parts stores, those have all been replaced and you know, eliminated all these small businesses because you got Walmart, the superstore. And the volume at which they acquire products and sell products allows them to deliver lower prices than mom and pop businesses could deliver. So, I mean, that's the business of economics. I understand that. That all makes sense. I don't have any problem with that. I'm not crazy about it, but I don't have any problem with it. But when they're reaping the benefits of government assistance for their employees because they're not paying a living wage, when they're making the kind of money that they're making, doing the kind of volume that they're doing, they can afford to pick up the tab of paying their own damn employees so that we don't have to subsidize their workforce with our tax dollars. Maybe we wouldn't have to tax senior meals and all the other ridiculous things that we slap taxes on if we weren't subsidizing people like Bezos and the Walton family.
I'm going to say neither Bezos or the Waltons need it. So, yeah.
I mean, you know, I understand. And it's when a company has stockholders, they have what's called a fiduciary responsibility to earn as much money for the stockholders as is possible. Now, does that mean they have to not pay a living wage because they're dedicated and committed and responsible to their stockholders? I mean, it's impossible to treat your employees as well as possible and your return as maximum dividends to your stockholders. Those are two, you know, competing masters. You can't serve two masters in that regard. But you could pay a living wage and pay a little less to your stockholders without violating your fiduciary duties to your stockholders, can't you? I mean, maybe somebody who's got a better understanding of business than me, and there are many of you out there I know. Maybe somebody who understands a little bit better than me how business works and why these companies can't pay a living wage, why they deserve to be subsidized by taxpayer dollars for their workforce. I will never understand that. You know, and I read that story today that they are the two biggest employers in the state of Washington that have the most employees on assistance. I don't get it.
It's crazy.
A texter, Ryan in Tacoma, says, I will not shop at Walmart. You know, or all my wife buys a lot of stuff on Amazon. So does mine. My wife buys a lot of stuff on Amazon, too. And I know that it puts smaller businesses out of business. Amazon's business practices are just cutthroat. Amazon has been brought before Senate hearings before in some of their business practices. You know, the way their algorithms provide products, when you do a search for a product on Amazon and, you know, your small business doesn't have a prayer coming up on the first page because Amazon takes what you make, makes the exact same product, puts it under a different brand name and sells it, which comes up first in the search engine and probably at a lower price, again, because of volume. And that's kind of that monopolistic, you know, predatory business practices. There are laws against that kind of stuff. A texter Benny says Walmart actually tutors their employees on how to apply for and qualify for as much public assistance as possible. Where's a Senate hearing on that? Okay, let me save you some time. Hunter Biden's a crackhead. He's got a drug problem. He leached off his dad's name, and he's benefited from nepotism. Cancel your hearings. That's all you'll ever go. That's all you need to know about Hunter Biden. Spend those hearings finding out why Walmart is getting tax breaks deluxe from every state they're in, and their employers are being paid by us, the taxpayer, in the way of subsidizing through SNAP programs. And I know that Walmart, and I know that Walmart's to some degree, but Amazon to a much larger degree, while they're not paying a living wage and their employees qualify for assistance, federal assistance, they do have programs that benefit their employees in the way of they'll pay for further education for their employees. You know, and those are all great, and those benefit people, but, you know, it just irks me when we as taxpayers have to subsidize these big corporations, these multi-billion dollar corporations. Here's a texter from the 360. The problem that I don't know how to get around is that each store has to stand on its own. Each store only makes $100K, $200K a year. The Waltons are billionaires because they have over 10,000 of these stores, each making $10K or $100K or $200K a year in profit. Is that all that a Walmart location makes, is $100K to $200K a year in profit?
That doesn't – I would think they'd make significantly more than that. That sounds like a small number.
Well, you know, I'm going to trust the texter. 360's probably got some insight that I don't have yet, and I appreciate it. And that makes sense. When you buy the cheapest products available, when you put them for the very cheapest, lowest prices available – you know, your markup's not that great. There is the cost of doing business. And even though you're paying a poverty wage to these workers, you're paying a lot of workers. A lot of overhead to run a big store. I get it. And I know the Waltons make it up just like they deliver the discounts through volume. They make their record profits through volume. I get it. You're absolutely right. Texter says Walmart's slogan ought to be, Walmart, come work for us. We won't pay you, but the government will. That seems to be the case, doesn't it? I just don't I don't understand why the government allows that to happen. You know, there in this era of record profits for corporations, record profits, record salaries for CEOs, and I understand the market is what the market is. And if you want the best CEO to do the best job for your company, you got to pay him a competitive wage. I understand all that, but in a time when people are working full-time and qualifying for federal assistance, or, you know, when CEO pay has gone up 300% in the last 30 years and worker pay has stayed relatively flat in that time, you know, all the problems that we have in this society of homelessness and crime, it really can all be circled back to pay inequity. It really can. The decimation of a middle class of America. You know, the days when one family could have one income, one working parent, and afford to not just live, but maybe even buy a house, put your kid through school on one income. Those days are gone. You know, we've been convinced that you got to have two jobs. You got to have more stuff. You'll never be able to buy a house. You work full time. You both work full time. And yet your family qualifies for federal assistance because companies are reaping record profits. And because we, the taxpayers, we put up with it. We vote for people who kowtow to these big corporations and give them incentives after incentives after incentives. 480 texts in tonight, and you're spot on. Record bonuses, record profits for oil companies, for grocery companies. Meanwhile, we can't make ends meet on a month-to-month basis. It's frustrating. Let's mix it up a little bit here. We'll change gears. We'll talk about, you know, here, there's a study that says, in your moment of truth, could you rise to the occasion? Could, if it was an emergency was at hand, would you step up? Could you save everybody? Everybody thinks they could in the moment. Experts think maybe you or me won't be up to the task. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you how. Kyra Knights, Spike O'Neill, Tony Young. We'll be right back. Hey, Tony. Yeah! Lisa Brooks is going to hang me for a minute here. Welcome back to Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Tony Young is on the board.
Yo.
So, Brittany Howard is going to be at Bumbershoot.
Really? Really?
Yes.
I love her so much.
I know, right?
Alabama Shakes.
This year, and it's not Alabama Shakes, it's just Brittany Howard. No, that's her.
She's split from the Shakes.
She's performing on her own.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not Alabama Shakes, but it's Brittany Howard. That's okay. That's a whole lot of Alabama Shakes.
Oh, yeah.
She's fantastic. Yep. I like the new, local-centric lineup that they've got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the first time in 3 years, 50th anniversary, a lot of things coming together. A two-year festival instead of, or two-day festival instead of four-day festival.
Oh, that I didn't know.
It's only 2 days.
Okay.
I think it's the second, third of September, if I'm not mistaken, but don't quote me on that. I've had a lot of airtime and not a lot of sleep. I wanted to ask you this. There's a study out about confidence and overconfidence specifically. And there was I'll get into the study in just a minute. But it's shown that men were far more overconfident than women, almost from like a 3-to-1.
Totally believe that.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If you were on a plane and by some horrific stretch of circumstance, both pilots became incapacitated. If you had all the assistance possible, the flight tower, do you think you could land a plane?
Do you think you could? Wow, what a question. Well, is that the only option?
They come on the PA, says, is there anybody that knows how to fly a plane?
Okay.
Do you think if you stepped up, nerves of steel, walked up to the cockpit, said, I'll give it my best shot, and you were able to, communicate with the ground and have somebody, because we've all seen it in the movies, right?
Right.
Do you think you would have the patience, the spine, the fortitude to land an airplane?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Cool.
I mean, you've got the support, yeah.
I do, too. Now, experts say neither one of us would have a rat's ass chance in hell. There's practically zero chance that a novice, even with all of the assistance possible, could do this. And men... almost 60% of men, no, excuse me, almost 46% of men thought that, yeah, I could land a plane.
Oh, wow.
I could do it. I've seen it done in numerous. I've played Flight Simulator. I could do this.
Well, I think if you've actually, Flight Simulator is pretty accurate, and you can choose what kind of plane you're going to fly.
True.
And if you're really good at that game, I would absolutely say, well, all right, you're going to get in that seat and you're going to do it. They're going to talk you through it, but you can do it.
A study was done of over 1,000 people. 20,000 adults were surveyed in this study. Nearly one third said they were somewhat confident that they could land a plane if given all the assistance they've seen and from all the experience they've seen watching on television and movies, and some because of Flight Simulator. Okay. Experience. It was literally four to one, men to women with that sense of overconfidence.
Not surprised, yeah.
But the expert, and they did this, they were trying to gauge how overconfidence plays out in difference between men and women.
Is that overconfidence for this particular question, though, or is that a level of trust?
That's a good question.
Maybe a bit of both, I would think.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
A bit of both.
They said, I'll go into why. There's no way we could do this. Nobody could do it. It would take a miracle. Said, first off, you're going to hope somebody is asking you to come up front and letting you in the cabin. First and foremost, good luck getting into the cabin. Because if both pilots happen to pass out, even the flight attendants aren't getting in the cabin. So I know that's not really a fair factor, but that's step one.
Oh, these days. That's right, because they have to be
after 9/11, it's a fortress.
Right.
Right? So now assuming that the flight attendants have access, because they can get in the cabin, they said even most people wouldn't even know how to communicate with the tower. Unless the headset is on the pilot passed out in his seat, you probably wouldn't know where to find the headset in the cockpit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you wouldn't know what radio frequency to talk to the tower on.
It doesn't just like automatically go someplace.
It doesn't. You have to. I know, right? and imagine now you've actually gotten to the cockpit. You've gotten the body out of the chair. You're in the pilot seat. You've got the headset on, and you've figured out how to talk to the tower.
Okay.
So you've got a plane we've all seen the inside of a cockpit,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, we're talking the kind of levers and buttons and switches. Mm-hmm. for someone to talk. I mean, you could put it on autopilot. Maybe they could talk it in autopilot, mm-hmm. but you can't stay up there forever. I mean, the story says, at some point, the earth is calling. You're going to run out of fuel. You know, at some point, communication with a tower would be, for a novice, that task alone is almost impossible to figure out. And then figuring out, configuration with finding an airport that's safe to land, and they could probably talk you through a lot of this process.
Yeah.
They really could talk you through things. Okay, you would look for this switch. It's above your head because they'll have people trying to help you.
And they'll have their version of flight simulator up so they can say more specifically.
Right. Look to your left. They're like right below. See the thing it says? Yeah. See the thing that says, don't push this, don't touch that. The one right below that, that's the one you want to touch.
Okay.
They could probably talk you into being able to gain control of the plane, mm-hmm. right? They could talk you into being able to locate what airport to steer heading toward, turn this dial to 477 degrees, punch this number in, then hit that green orange button. That'll send in your location coordinates, and the plane will then track to this number. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you're going to have a plane traveling upwards of 200 miles an hour at the point of contact, ascending 1,000 feet per minute downward.
Yeah.
And you've got to land this thing at some point.
Okay.
You still feel like you do it.
I do. I really, I mean, this is awful because
no,
tomorrow if I'm in this,
You said you could do it! I heard you, Lisa Brooks! People in the back are screaming.
But I think that, so much of today's, and we're lucky we're living in the Seattle area because we could probably get some Boeing engineers to text us right now to tell us.
Okay, yeah, good call.
They have made these, in some situations, very manageable. I mean, landing, I think, would be the most difficult challenge, but I think there's probably a way someone who really knows what they're doing could talk you through it.
I kind of feel the same. I still feel like, and even though this expert say there's no way, we couldn't.
It's happened. We've done news stories about it. It does happen.
That people are talked down. I mean, it most often when it does happen, it's a small commuter plane where the pilot goes out and someone is sitting there and they could, take over the controls and.
Did you hear the news story that happened today?
No.
There was a Southwest flight that the pilot fainted. And there was an experienced pilot that was on the plane who moved into the cockpit.
And was able to bring it home.
Well, that person communicated with the tower and flight control while the co-pilot was able to land the plane. So it
really is
did...
a two-man job. They say the good news in the story is the experts that they spoke to in this story says, I cannot tell you in my lifetime remembering when both capable pilots became... incapacitated. So I mean it's never happened where both guys are gone.
Knocking wood, right?
I mean,
now.
Your texts are saying, hey, I've seen an airplane, I know how to blow up the autopilot. That's not real.
Not OTTO pilot.
You hope it's a better autopilot than that one.
Yeah, really. That big smile on his face, smoking a cigarette and everything. That was one of the funniest scenes of all time.
Yep.
But I think you could too. I think you've probably got a better shot than I do. I'm a bold talker. But I, if I'm lucky enough to find the headset and talk to the tower, I'd be too stupid to let the button go after I talked so he could talk back.
You'd do fine, too. Oh,
well, you've both got a better shot than I do. I'm blind.
anyway, according to this study, men are 4 times as overconfident as women. But, Lisa, I think you could pull it off.
That makes me feel all warm and fuzzy.
You betcha. And I'll just be in the back drinking as much free booze as I get my hands on, making my peace with the Lord. It's Kyra Knights of Spike O'Neill. Tony Young's on the board. We'll be right back after these. Welcome back to Kyra Knights. So last break, we talked about the idea that we could land an airplane in an emergency situation. And Tony came in with Fly Like an Eagle and then took us out with Learning to Fly from Pink Floyd. And right there, it's a little sexual healing. I like your choice of music, Tony.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to stick on the topic of overconfidence. Are you a big fan of the wildlife videos, the National Geographic specials that they run.
I like them. I'm more a fan of the BBC Planet Earth with, you know, David Attenborough.
I love those.
Yeah.
I love those. And they're so beautifully shot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are ones that are – I love the narration. I love Attenborough's narration.
Oh, he's got a gorgeous voice.
But I've heard, like, Obama – former President Obama has done narrations of some of these Earth
videos.
And you can spend just a whole weekend watching. You can literally tour the planet in high def, beautiful shots of below the sea.
Absolutely.
Through rainforest, animals from all over the world. Mm. I love watching that kind of stuff. And this story, when I saw this story, it's heartbreaking, but it's a story, I think, of overconfidence.
Absolutely.
Male Ellen, Tony found this story and he's like, you think this would be a good show topic? I'm like, yes, Tony, after days of when will President Trump be arrested? Or what do we do with the homeless encampment under the Ship Canal Bridge? All these stories or, you know, whatever it might be. While this is heartbreaking, it's I think, a nice different story.
I'm glad I could provide something a little bit different.
You're a good man. Male elephant seals are dying from exhaustion. And I know, Spike, why would you bring up a story like that? It's a horrific headline. Male elephant seals are dying from exhaustion as they try to service 100-strong harems of female elephant seals. This is from...
Isn't that beautiful?
It's beautiful. This is from the Southwest Pacific, a place called Makerere Island in the South Pacific. They did a study of 14,000 southern elephant seals. And what they found was that the males of the species, if you watch any of these National Geographic or the Planet Earth or the BBC nature specials, you know, the seals are very territorial, and especially elephant seals. Those are the massive animals. And they of course, they're so big that they can only maneuver in the water. When they come on land to breed, it's difficult for them to move. But the males are so big and so competitive that they want all the females, and they literally battle other males for the right to breed with up to 100 female elephant seals. So males who can't go back to the sea for food, once they get on land, they have to live off the body of blubber and you know, fat that they've stored in their body. And that's what they mean. They're there and eat. Had a story today about how bears, grizzlies are being reintroduced to the Cascades. You know, grizzlies eat all fall and sleep all winter and wake up hungry. I don't know why he'd bring them back to the trails of the Cascades. Anyway, elephant seals come on land knowing that they've got to repopulate and procreate and keep their species alive. And they become territorial and try to keep as many females as they can. So they are out there trying to breed with over 100 different females in their harems. And they're battling other elephant seals for dominance over these females. And these elephant seals that they've watched, and they studied 14,000 elephant seals in the southwestern Pacific Ocean, and they found that these males are just so, it's instinctive that they need to procreate, they need to dominate, and that's domination of the, that's how species survive, the strong survive, right? It's not greed, it's not, you know, bravado or overconfidence even, it's them thinking they are the best male, they won the battle with the other males. So therefore, they are superior. They need to breed with as many females as possible to give their species as much of a fighting chance in today's world as they possibly can. And these guys are talking about leaving it on the field. These guys are breeding till they drop, trying to please 100 seals or more harems. And they see this phenomenon of these males literally breeding themselves to death, trying to be the beach. They call it the beach master. They're trying to be beach master of harems of up to 100 females.
I'm sorry, Beachmaster just sounds like a great name for a reality TV show. I know, it's very sad, I know, but it just sounds like a name of a reality show. Beachmaster.
I was thinking more of like a, you know, bicycle with a comfy seat and wide handlebars. That'd be a great Beachmaster, you know, or the right chair with a cup holder and a canopy. No, this Beachmaster is a elephant seal, a bull elephant seal, who weighs literally over, 1,500 pounds and is trying to breed with over 100 females and protect his harem from other male challengers. And they literally breed themselves to death. And, you know, I'm not a real religious guy or spiritual guy. I don't know what's in the afterlife. I don't know if we go to heaven, if we just go away, if we're reincarnated, though. If we're reincarnated, I think I want to come back as a bull, elephant, seal. I can't think of a better way to go than to be the beach master of my harem, giving it my all, you know, and until my last breath, keeping the species alive with my superior seed. What a way to go. I told you it was a positive story, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Overconfidence, nothing. It's duty, honor, harems.
I mean, who doesn't love a good story about seal harems, you know?
I'd watch a live action with this with Seth Rogen as the Beachmaster, you know? I'd watch this movie.
I'd watch Attenborough narrate that, yeah.
We're going to go now. Tony, thank you. We're going to play some of the highlights from the Cairo Midday Show. We're going to play you some of the best of Jack Stein. Now, we had some interesting topics from earlier today. If you caught it earlier, I hope you don't mind a re-rack of it and listen to it a little bit. If you missed it earlier today, I hope you'll find it interesting and entertaining and beneficial. We'll be right back after these. It's Cairo Nights.